The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Kia ora, I'm Senga, and welcome to Heritage South, the show connecting Southlanders to their heritage and where we talk about heritage happenings here in the South. We've been focusing on stories of our built heritage in recent episodes, but our natural history is equally important. So today's episode is the first in a new series bringing you stories of our land, its importance to our heritage and the people who care about it. And joining me today is someone who I know is absolutely passionate about the land and the environment, the conservation and care of it, and working with others to make sure it is kept beautiful. Jessie Blithall is the Southland representative for the QE2 Trust, and in 2021 she was recognised for her work at the Environment Southland Community Awards, where she was presented with the Individual Environmental Action Leadership Award. Now, if you could see Jessie right now, she's going, "Oh, Senga, why did you have to bring that up?" But actually, I think it's really important that we know that there are people who are passionate and do get recognised sometimes for the work that they do. So thank you for joining me, Jessie.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
Really happy to welcome you along to Heritage South. And I know that, like me, you were not born, you're not a local Southlander, but that you have also made Southland your home. So what is it that drew you to Southland?
Oh, gosh. Well, if I'm perfectly honest, I think it was the natural environment, which we're talking about today. I love tramping, and I had a couple of really great tramping trips down here in the early 2000s. And I grew up in Ōtautahi, Christchurch, and I thought, gosh, why doesn't everybody know about how wonderful Southland is? Is this some kind of conspiracy of silence? Because I just thought if everyone had been on a trip like me and had seen the beautiful landscape and the amazing recreational opportunities, why wasn't everyone in Christchurch moving down here? And as I became a local and got to meet people, a few people said, well, actually, don't tell everyone.
Exactly.
So I can understand. It's really quiet and lovely down here, so you probably, you know, don't want crowds of people, but yeah.
So you were obviously able to find the right role that allowed you to come down to be in Southland?
No, that I was taking a bit of a punt, actually. I didn't know what I'd do for a job down here when I moved down. My partner and I both took the plunge, and we worked it out afterwards. So, yeah, thankfully we landed on our feet, and we really, 20 years later, we really like living in Southland.
Oh, I love it when people are brave enough to just go, I'm just going to do it. you just take the leap and you have the faith that it's all going to work out. And in your case, it really, really did. So you've been working in that area of our natural environment and the conservation and protection of it for quite some time. And your current role is as the Southland representative for the QE2 Trust. Tell me a little bit about what the QE2 Trust actually is.
Sure thing. Yeah. So maybe some of our listeners have heard about the QE2 Trust, or QE2 as we sometimes just affectionately get called. Not Kiwi 2, that is named after Queen Elizabeth II, not the bird. So I work for the QE2 National Trust as a regional representative. There's two of us in Southland. It's a little confusing at times. So my role is labelled Southland and the other rep is in the west. His catchment is the Waiau catchment. So Mark Sutton is that side of the mountain. And I've been doing the role nearly 10 years, which is pretty cool. And I hope to be doing it for decades more, knock on wood, as long as my knees behave themselves and all my bits and pieces stay together. It's a great job. I really enjoy it. And what is the QE2 National Trust? Well, we're a funny sort of organisation. We are a charity and a non-government organisation, been around since the early... Well, we were formed in 1976 officially, but the conversations and planning started before that. So we're nearly 50. We're turning 50 next year, which is quite thrilling. And yeah, we basically partner with landowners who want to protect something special on their land. So it's a voluntary process. People opt in. They say, we have this beautiful forest, or we have some interesting old gold sluicings, or a par site, or a rock art, or a beautiful wetland, something kind of special on our land on private title. We want to protect it. And can you partner up with us to do that? So the trust sort of stands as perpetual guardian in a sense, and we're the other half of the equation. So the title has a constraint registered on it, which is called an open space covenant. and I can explain in detail about that later if you want. And that runs with the title in perpetuity. So forever, that protection sits there. And whoever buys that land in the future is also, you know, obliged to not sort of damage or harm that special thing that's being protected. Yeah.
That makes it really special. And as we know with the environment, you can do something that you may not actually see the benefit of it for, you know, several decades or you know, a couple of generations, but it's, you know, if you're looking after it, then it's still there, you know,
in
50 or 100 years' time or even longer, hopefully.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So that is really special. So you talk about these land covenants. How many are there in Southland?
Oh, any day of the week, that changes. There's been an incredible appetite to do lots of protection. I have actually a long wait list, which is a marvellous problem to have. But I would gauge it. At present time, give or take, and when this goes to air, the numbers might have shifted, but I'd say around 450 in Southland alone, and over 5,000 nationally. So,
that's pretty
cool. Yeah,
yeah. So, of course, you know, you need to tell us a little bit more about what these covenants actually are. So, what is an open space covenant?
Oh, very good. So, we have our own piece of legislation that was put together in the 70s, and open space covenant is the term used in our Act. And it's a slightly old-fashioned term. We inherited it, I think, from the UK with their national trust model. And open space in the parlance of the 70s meant undeveloped land, so open countryside, areas that had, you know, hedgerows and meadows and woody copses and things, and not factories and cities and villages. And here in New Zealand, the open space is defined in our Act, but it is essentially a very wide range of things. It could be ecologically important, scientifically important, geologically important, landscape values, cultural values, or a combination thereof. So it's almost anything you want it to be, really. Yeah.
And I suppose that, you know, in more recent years, where the idea of looking after the environment and making sure that it is protected is maybe more mainstream than it once was?
Is that what I want to say?
It seems to be a greater awareness of it anyway. And so maybe there are more people who go, well, yeah, I have got something special on my land that does need to be protected after I'm gone.
Think so. People are less shy about being proud of being greenies, if you will. You know, greenies is a loaded term, but, you know, they've got strong feelings about the natural world and strong protective urges. And I think that's marvellous. And maybe people felt a little bit awkward about talking about that sort of 30, 40, 50 years ago. But I'm very pleased that some people weren't shy about talking about that. The early people who formed the QE2 National Trust, particularly Gordon and Celia Stevenson, they saw some very dramatic changes in their farming landscape. They're farmers from the North Island. And they thought, wow, this is shifting so fast. In our lifetime, we're going to see all these wetlands and forest areas in our catchment disappear. This was a very different time in New Zealand history. We had active government subsidies to clear and develop land and cut down forests and drain wetlands and so on. And so it was sort of geared in the opposite direction to how it is now, perhaps. And they wondered if there was a way of protecting things and sort of landowners being able to choose if they didn't want to exploit a resource on their land. And this, if you sort of know your environmental history, or some people do, some people were less interested, but in a nutshell, we didn't have a conservation department, we didn't have a Reserves Act, we didn't have an RMA, we had very little legislation in New Zealand that protected the natural world. We had the National Parks Act, but that wasn't really suitable for small-scale things on farms and so on. So they went to the government and they asked, what can you do for us? And Muldoon was our Prime Minister at the time. And, you know, he was a very canny operator. And he thought, well, this is actually kind of a neat idea. This is something the farmers want. Let's make it work. So got some clever brains together, wrote up a piece of legislation. And the timing was just perfect that Queen Elizabeth II was having her 25th Jubilee. So they named us and our Act after her because she's a great lover of trees and the natural world. And it was a good bit of marketing, I think. So that's the history of why we're called what we're called. But, yeah, essentially invented by farmers who wanted to actively protect things on their own land because they valued them really highly and they didn't want to see them gone.
And a great example of right time, right place, putting things together. Everything fell into place.
It seems it did.
In some respects. Yeah. I mean, not that there wouldn't have been a lot of hard work and you know, conversations that needed to take place, but for those things to all fall into place at the right time, it's great. I did not know.
It's a neat little story.
I did not know that. So that is really great. Now, I know that you love what you do. What kind of as a typical day? Do you have a typical day?
It can be highly variable. If I broke it down roughly into percentage of hours over the year, about half of my time is spent monitoring existing areas that are protected. So going to covenanted areas, meeting with the landowners if they're free. Sometimes they're hellishly busy, but ideally they can come with me or we can meet up quickly for a chat. And basically it's almost like a sort of, what would you call it, almost a compliance job. I'm going to check that the covenant is still there and that the rules are being adhered to, that the person who owns that land isn't breaking the rules. And I'm very grateful. All my Southland landowners are actually quite lovely and almost none of them break the rules. And occasionally when they do, it's usually not intentional. It's usually a misunderstanding, so it's pretty quick to solve. But yeah, essentially I'm there to sort of just run my eye over things, make sure that they're being good landowners and following the rules. And then I'm also there, so half of it's sort of compliance officer, if you will, and half of it's cheerleader. I'm there to sort of wave the pom-poms and pat them on the back and say, this is marvellous, look what you're doing here, this is really, really cool. A lot of people are quite humble and quiet about what they're doing out the back of the farm, quietly trapping or, you know, killing some pest plants or doing some good stuff. And so I like being able to, you know, give them that acknowledgement because they might not be boasting about it to their friends, but they're working hard out there. So yeah, that's part of the job. The other part of the job is things like this, you know, explaining what Kiri2 is, giving public talks or going to interest groups or leading field trips through sites if there's a local interest group or the landowner wants some help with the science interpretation, and also helping people do new protection. So there's lots of people wanting to register protection on their land. And a small amount of my time is spent problem solving. So there will be some sites that have a tricky issue, maybe an ecologically challenging thing, something's gone wrong with the hydrology or they've got a really nasty weed that's coming in from adjacent areas, and so that's part of the work as well, is sort of putting our heads together and seeing what we can do to fix these problems.
So it sounds very much to me, Jessie, that a large part of what you do, regardless of which part of it is, it's about working with those landowners and building relationships with them that allows you to do your job to the best of your ability and make them feel like you're kind of metaphorically holding their hand along the way, that you're actually working together with them and that you're not there to be, you know, with the big growly stick.
Yeah, I don't like using the growly stick. It's definitely not my favourite activity, but once or twice I've had to growl at someone. But yeah, most of the time you can get people to understand what the problem is and just talk through it. And to me, that's the most enduring solution because I'll be working with those people for as long as they own that land. So it's helpful to, you know, you don't want to hit the thermonuclear button straight away. You want to work alongside people. But yeah, it's interesting. Some of the things that I find quite unique about the job is the fact that often I know the site or the land better than the landowner because they may be new landowners. And so I've been going there for a decade, or in some cases I might know the property from previous work. So I've got one that I've been going to for nearly 20 years and know it quite well. And it's had a series of different managers come and go. And yeah, I find that process really interesting. So I'm almost like the kind of leprechaun that pops out and does a little, you know, ecological induction of what's special and why is this place sort of protected. And that's quite neat. And knowing that the original landowner who took that step to protect that site, that their wishes are being upheld, that's a really big part of my work. So, I take that quite seriously and I think that's really important. Yeah.
Because I guess, you know, that as you say, if you're working with landowners who are the people that have decided to have the covenant is one thing, but building that relationship with someone who's bought land and maybe not fully understanding what that covenant means to help turn that into a positive and go, you know, what you've got here is so amazingly special that it needs to be looked after in perpetuity.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like you could cheesily refer to it as like a dating service or playing Cupid. You're trying to get them to fall in love with their covenant haven't already. But some people, they tell me quite frankly, they say, we looked at the house for 5 minutes and we spent 2 hours in the forest and that's what sold the property to us. So they're very easy to work with. But some people, they're just hellishly busy, and to be fair, if they're being good and they're not breaking the rules, then that's a win for me. If they're really passionate and they want to get stuck in, that's even better, and I'll be very happy to help them with that. But there are a mix of people who are both the original owners, the subsequent owners, several owners down the line who some of these covenants, of course, go back to the late 70s, so they've had a series of owners over time.
Well, that's fantastic. Hey, look, thank you so much, Jessie, for coming in and chatting with me about the work that you do, the importance of our land, and the work that you do through the QE2 Trust.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for joining me on Heritage South. This show is available as a podcast from the Radio Southland website, radiosouthland.org.nz. You can stream or download this episode. Just look for us in the Programs tab. Links can also be found on Facebook through Radio Southland's page, facebook.com/Radio Southland, and also on Heritage South at Heritage South NZ. And if you want to make sure you don't miss an episode, you can subscribe to this podcast on the Apple Podcasts platform through the Access Media app or on Spotify.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.